this is an ongoing problem. Not always are they as horrific as maybe what you explained there, where it takes the MRF down or shuts the MRF down for consistent periods of time. But contamination within single stream recycling or recycling in general has been on the increase and does cause us a problem every day.
And define MRF for our listeners.
So a MRF is a material recovery facility for us or for Midwest Fiber. This is a facility where mixed recyclables are coming in together. And we use a process that includes lots of equipment and some labor to separate those materials back out into their own individual recycling streams.
Has contamination ever led to a shutdown at Midwest Fiber?
It has, yeah. I mean, your example of a crowbar ripping a conveyor, that's not uncommon. You know, it does happen, unfortunately. We've had other pieces of non-conforming materials come through the facility, and they get wedged or stuck into holes or wrap up around sprockets and shut down the facility. So it does happen.
And Michael, why do you think these contaminants are getting into the recycling stream? What's going on here?
So people are eager to recycle really as much as they possibly can. And I think people want to even err on the side of over-recycling in that, you know, just kind of lumping it in there. I mean, if we look at plastics, you know, as a specific example, you know, just people often will interpret, you know, the little chasing arrows recycling symbol on the bottom of a plastic container. And that means that that's generally recyclable. And so they can just throw it in, whereas actually it's much more...
Nuanced.
Thank you. Issue as far as which plastics can be recycled, both, you know, technically and economically, you know, what is there a market for?
And number six, which is basically polystyrene, right?
Right.
Isn't really even a plastic, but it has the symbol on the back. So people just think they can throw it in there.
Well, it is a plastic. It is technically a plastic. And it is actually technically recyclable. There is technology to recycle it. But economically speaking, there's this problem with it being such a high volume, low density and low value material. So essentially you fill up a truck full of styrofoam. You start shipping it towards a distant market where there could be some demand for it, you've lost money as soon as that truck starts moving. And so that right there is a significant barrier.
So besides damaging equipment or leading to a shutdown, Todd, what are the other costs? Staff hours to sort out the non-recyclables from the stream, disposing of those contaminants. Where is this costing Midwest Fiber and all of us?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, while we don't like those big contaminations that cause us shutdowns, what's more common is the day-to-day contamination that comes in. So for us internally, you know, we have a lot of equipment in place that helps separate out this equipment and do it very efficiently. So the one thing I'd say, there's usually kind of a disconnect from where the recycling is getting put into the bin to how it gets separated. So we're trying to do it in a high-volume facility. So we're running it through screens that have rotating discs and rotating shafts, and a lot of times those contaminating materials will wrap around the shafts, and we have to go in and physically shut down the plant to close those down at the end of the day. So we're putting labor in at the end of the day. Additionally, we have to have additional staff there on the sorting line trying to pull out those contaminations before they possibly make it to anywhere else in the system that causes us more problems.
So what is your contamination rate? I would guess you'd be able to peg this based on the amount of waste after it's sorted that goes to the landfill from Midwest Fiber.
Correct. Yeah, and we do. And it's something we track and we monitor regularly. And I would say for all the material that comes into our facility, it's about 10% right now. It's up a little bit from where we started originally. When we first opened our doors back in 2011, yeah, contamination rate was around 8%. We hear a lot of numbers around the industry of maybe closer to 12 or 13%. But right now we're about 10%. And obviously we want to try to decrease that, but make sure it's not going to increase anymore.
Is there a cost associated with each percentage point? Can you get to that number?
Tough to say. I've never really pinpointed it to that. We do know the cost of contamination, just direct contamination. One is it comes through our facility. It has to be processed, which has a fee associated with it. At the end of the day, it still goes to the landfill as well. So over the course of the month, I mean, we're processing about 4,000 tons of single stream material. So 10% of that coming through would be about, 400 tons, I think, of material that comes through the facility that's technically not recyclable.
So what do you both think? Michael, you seem to be fairly optimistic in sort of saying this was wishful recycling. Is it laziness, apathy, or wishful recycling? Todd, I'll ask you first.
I mean, we see both, to be honest with you. You know, we see things that come in that we believe that people had the right intention. They think it should go in the bin.
What's an example of that?
Well, I mean, I think an example of that is maybe like a plastic laundry basket. They think it should probably go in the bin. You know, I like to think that possibly even somebody putting a swimming pool liner in there thinks that, well, it's plastic, I'm putting it in
there. That sounds like it would really clog up the machinery.
Yeah, and that those are real problems for us. And a lot of the contaminations are seasonal for us, depending on the time of the year. There's other things that we get in that you can just tell. You know, there was really, it was just laziness on the part of the consumer. You know, we get some random things in. And you look at them and go, yeah, this was kind of ill intent. This was not intended for the recycle bin.
And Michael, same question. Is it laziness, apathy, or wishful recycling?
It's probably a mix of all of the above. I do like to lean towards, yes, the wishful recycling, because we get those inquiries on a daily basis. We get people who call us, you know, desperately seeking a answer to how to recycle this, that, or the other. And so often it is a consumer good that simply is not recyclable, that there isn't the technology, there isn't the market, there isn't systems for it. And so the disappointment we hear in people's voices daily when they're so discouraged and they're looking to us for a positive answer. And I know right off the bat, even when I pick up the phone and I start to hear it, I know I'm going to let them down.
or it could be guilt because they've been doing it all along and just wanted confirmation that what they were doing was okay.
Yes, that too.
Michael Brown is the Executive Director of the Ecology Action Center, and Todd Shoemaker is Director of Sales and Procurement for Midwest Fibers. So the key here has to be education, I would guess. I didn't know until Michael Brown called me out in my garage when I flipped a bottle cap into my recycling bin that bottle caps are a no-no. They're too small. They clog up things. How do you reach and educate, you know, 80% of Bloomington residents who are now recycling, or the number that is in normal that is recycling?
So we do need to continue to innovate and get more creative with outreach. I mean, the Ecology Action Center has been doing this in the community for over 40 years now, doing education specifically on recycling, trying to get people to recycle more, recycle better is increasingly a focus now. But something we're about to actually roll out is a new smartphone and web-based application called Recycle Coach, which is going to provide people geographic-based real-time answers to their recycling questions. And so a resident can put in their address and instantly find out the exact recycling services available at their home, exactly how to deal with any specific product. And this includes things like household hazardous waste. And so it's really going to be a useful tool and help educate people a bit further.
And that's your role, really.
Exactly.
The EAC's role.
We are designated as a solid waste agency for Bloomington, Normal, and McLean County. And so in addition to doing solid waste planning and some coordination of some programs, we're there to educate and do outreach in order to increase recycling.
And Midwest Fiber does some education. I was at your website. There's some easy to read, easy to print PDFs that say, this is the stuff that's allowed.
Yeah, we feel like we have a shared responsibility in that as well. You know, we cover a little bigger geographic footprint than just Bloomington Normal and McLean County. We're bringing in material from about 100-mile radius of Bloomington Normal to be processed at our facility. So we think we're probably trying to reach over 1 million people to educate them on what should be going in the recycle bin. So, I mean, I think a good first step is one, just good identification on your recycling bin. Obviously, we try to be pretty proactive on Facebook, but it reaches a pretty limited market share. And we do have some people that work in-house, and we try to get out and do some educational things. We've been able to do tours at the facility. Because, again, I think sometimes there's a disconnect. People think the material comes down the line and there's a person there sorting it at, you know, at each level, each piece. And that's just not an efficient way to try to process the volumes of material that come through. So we feel like we have a shared responsibility in it. We try to do some lesson plans on our website as well, so a teacher can come in and get some information they can share along with the younger students.
So I'll confess something else. I recycled a plastic tote once. So it had the number on the bottom, I think a 5 maybe or something, was a Rubbermaid tote.
Right. I have that here for you. I was going to bring it back for you. You should never put your name on your recycling. That's the one principle rule.
It did say Mike's Camping Supplies.
That's probably what it was.
Yeah. So
I knew it was one of you two then. So
is that a size? Is that a size based thing?
Yeah, it is. I mean, a lot of the sortation, quite honestly, and on our website, you know, we have a good tool with our virtual tour. So we realize not everybody can come to the MRF and the material recovery facility and see it, but you can understand the process a little bit more. And quite honestly, the process of sorting the material out oftentimes just sizes is based on the characteristic of the material. So when you mentioned this larger tote Rubbermaid container, while it is plastic, it's usually a size separation thing. And it is recyclable in that while we didn't ask for it, it was put in, we did recover it for recycling. But if we didn't manually put somebody in there and remove it, it would have ended up in our cardboard and contaminated that stream of material.
Could I have chopped it up and put it in there?
We would prefer it actually to be in a whole piece. And, you know, that's because it's easier for us to identify one piece of plastic compared to...
Sure. So I'm confused. Do you want the tote or not?
We're not asking for the tote to be put in the container.
Okay.
But the fact that you put it in the container, we're going to try to pull it out and try to recover it if we can.
Is the tote that you're bringing back to me today full of my bottle caps as well?
It is, yes.
Perfect. Perfect. So, Michael, do you think the smartphone app will actually curb wishful recycling? That's the goal, right? Is to see this contamination rate drop from 11 or 12% to maybe below 10.
I think it'll definitely help. I mean, the fact that we are right now, you know, we do keep fairly busy with some of these questions from residents right now. I think to have, you know, easy hands-on access to an immediate answer when we're not open, you know, on the weekends. And some of these detailed items like this, these little small waste streams aren't necessarily covered on our website, even though we have pages and pages of content as far as how to recycle this, that, and the other. It's hard to name every single consumer object. So I think the smartphone app will help cover that gap.
What responsibility do manufacturers bear? Juice boxes and Keurig coffee pods are made of multiple materials, nearly impossible or impractical to break down and recycle. If manufacturers are determining what's going to end up in the landfill, shouldn't they hold some of the financial responsibility for disposing of those items? And I'll ask you first, Michael.
Yes, and this is called product stewardship. And a lot of us in the waste industry are members of product stewardship organizations. There's a national council and a state council that we're all working together with manufacturers in order to try and improve the situation. And a really good example is e-waste. And so there's actually, for several years now, there has been an e-waste law in place in the state of Illinois. And it's, you know, had its pros and cons. It's not perfect by any means, but it's been, you know, a good example of an attempt to improve the situation since most e-waste is banned from Illinois landfills, since you can't put it in the trash. And the good news is that because of some of the weaknesses of the current program, actually a new program is coming to place, being phased and going to come online in 2019. And this should even be a better effort. There was some really good dialogue between recyclers, between manufacturers, between recycling coordinators such as myself to really improve this so that we have a better, more comprehensive system for Illinois residents.
And Todd, same question, manufacturer responsibility.
Yeah, I mean, I think manufacturers have responsibility to make sure they design and package products and materials that are readily recyclable. I mean, it's not uncommon at all that we have, maybe it's on the commercial side where somebody calls us and say, hey, the manufacturer of this said it's recyclable. Well, it's not recyclable locally. It's not recyclable readily. And I think that's, to me, is the metric that needs to be used. And oftentimes I say, well, hey, call them back. Maybe they'll take it back for you. And usually they don't have really a solution, but it's being used as some sort of marketing or greenwashing propaganda, which becomes a little bit of a challenge.
And greenwashing, you want to explain that?
I mean, I think that's, you know, the way I understand greenwashing is just basically where something's being represented as this environmental friendly green product, recyclable product. However, at the end of the day, it's really, really challenging.
So Europe and Canada, to a certain extent, have producer responsibility rules that make the manufacturer responsible for disposing of some of what they produce or their packaging. Do you think that might gain a toehold in the United States, Michael?
I think so. I think the e-waste being a good example, you know, there's been ongoing sustained efforts to build that and improve that system. I think there's interest with other waste streams, looking at things like carpeting, looking at things like household hazardous waste items like paint. There's definitely is some interest. There's interest, you know, I think all the way around between recyclers, recycling coordinators, manufacturers, retailers, everybody. They do see these things as a problem and are looking for common solutions.
Should we talk about plastic bags? We haven't talked about those yet. How big a problem are single-use plastic bags that people get from the grocery store, for instance?
Yeah, I mean, plastic film in general is the number one contamination we see at our facility. And sometimes, you're right, it is somebody taking one bag and stuffing in 10 more bags and throwing it in the recycle bin thinking they did the right thing. The other thing is just when folks are just packaging their recyclables in a plastic bag. It's not uncommon for me to be talking to somebody that say, oh, yeah, I recycle everything. I bring home my Ziploc baggie and my aluminum can from work. I leave it in the Kroger bag and throw it in the bin. So we pick up one bin that has 100 different plastic bags in it. So plastic bags are by far the biggest percentage of our contamination. They're not always by weight because they're not very heavy, but by volume, if you look at the pile of things that we call contamination or residuals, it looks like plastic film. And those are the things that wrap around our screens, and we have to put people in there, you know, regularly to go in and remove those. So they're a big problem. They're the biggest challenge we have.
And in fact, they are recyclable, but you just can't put them in the single stream recycle bin, Michael.
Yes. I mean, your grocery bags you get from, you know, Walmart, Kroger, wherever, are indeed recyclable. The market for them, you know, can fluctuate like everything else. But these are not accepted in our curbside system, but rather just about every retail store has a drop-off right inside their front door. And so it is something that people should recycle. But better yet is source reduction. And so this is where all these reusable bags that all of us have at home, and they somehow either stay at home or sit in the car when we go grocery shopping, we need to bring them into the store, use those, and simply displace the need for these single-use bags.
What about banning plastic bags? Should Bloomington Normal enact a single-use bag ban, Michael?
So there has been some conversations about this just internally. There was actually a really good proposal written up by a Heartland Community College student several years ago. It was actually very well done, and there were some conversations about this. It wasn't deemed at that point to be necessarily the right time. There has been talk more recently of a statewide system, and to clarify, neither of these were specifically about a ban so much as a system to de-incentivize single-use bags, whether they're plastic or paper, by simply putting a small fee on each one so as to incentivize the use of reusables instead.
If you could reduce or eliminate plastic bags, Todd, what do you think that would do to your contamination stream or the contamination to the stream?
Yeah, I mean, I would expect that we'd see easily a 20% decrease in the volume of contamination that we have. And, you know, I don't know the whole economic impact of that. I can tell you, if you're the farmer that works the fields behind Walmart, or if you work at the recycling center, I got a feeling both of us would be interested in that. Because you see also, not only from the recycling perspective, but just from the litter patrol as well.
I mean, no one likes to see one of those blowing in a tree.
Right.
Todd, is contamination putting a stress on a business already under stress? Tell me about the market value of some of what Midwest Fiber recovers.
Yeah, so, I mean, in general, you know, recycling has, it's a commodity. So much like corn, soybeans, and oil, it's constantly changing. It's in flux. And there's a lot of different factors that influence that. One of the biggest driving factors we have right now is that at the end of the day, in reality, a lot of these products get exported overseas for consumption. And some of those export markets have tightened up the regulations on imports. So about 5 years ago, there was an initiative put out called Green Fence, where they tried to make sure the quality of the material coming into China specifically meets their specifications. And now they have a new initiative called Green Sword. And so that's why it becomes really imperative to us to make sure that our finished product is good and clean newspaper, good and clean plastic bottles. So as we send it to end markets, we're one, not transferring our problem here to them. Two, we can keep the highest value. And three, any potential rejection or anything like that would be at a high cost.
Is glass a problem? Maybe for a couple of reasons. One, because of the market value of glass. And secondly, because glass breaks. It can contaminate, you know, the paper that you're trying to sell.
Yeah, from a worker hazard, it does cause challenges.
That too, yeah.
From worker hazard, it causes an issue. There is end markets for glass right now. In the value or the commodity stream, it's the only item that has a negative value to it. All the other items have a positive value to them.
So those are subsidizing glass, basically.
Those are pretty well subsidizing glass, right.
Waste Management dropped recycling glass from Houston because of the low prices and because of the broken glass contaminating other materials. Midwest Fiber, thinking about anything along those lines?
No, I don't think so. As long as we have a sustainable market for glass, unfortunately we do. I think you know, that's really regional generated. So if near Houston there's not a local glass processor, so we can separate the glass and it gets separated out. But when it gets separated, there's still a high amount of contamination in in it because it's a lot of your small pieces. So they have to go to an intermediary processor who then separates that glass out by color, by size, and gets out any non-conforming glass. So fortunately, we have those in Illinois still. So we have reasonable markets for them. Some other areas don't.
You talked about, you know, getting that material from a recycling bin where someone has helpfully sorted all of their recycling into plastic bags. Can you go into neighborhoods and audit recycling bins in neighborhoods, maybe give friendly tickets for contaminating the waste stream, or even give kudos for following all of the rules? Maybe I would get, if now that I've eliminated bottle caps, I would get the gold recycling bin on my block for a week because I'm recycling a lot and doing it well. What kind of customer engagement opportunities are there?
I mean, the one thing we have done is sometimes during Earth Day, we have went out and we inspect. We work with Bloomington and Bloomington Normal, and we randomly select the house, and if they have met, kind of like, hey, we've looked at your bin, it's been put out on your recycling day, and it meets approval, then they get, you know, a small little gift card or something like that from Midwest Fiber. So we have tried to do that with some limited success. And you know, the house that's doing it good is not the one we need to deal with. Mm. It's the house that's doing it bad is the one we need to deal with. Now, maybe they'd all have cart envy if you had the gold cart in front of your house, maybe. And they'd want to be that guy in the future.
Some recyclers are renegotiating contracts with the municipalities to charge cities more because of the contamination. Is Midwest Fiber there with Bloomington Normal? Is the contamination rate, you know, sort of, I think you said 12%, somewhere in that range. Is that still workable?
Yeah, we're at 10% contamination right now. And as that contamination rate, if it were to increase, then there would have to be discussions about renegotiation. You know, fortunately, we think it's our responsibility, along with the EAC's responsibility and the town itself, to really help keep contamination down. So we really hope that to not be an issue.
What's the pain point? What percentage are you at the ceiling?
I think we're getting close. You know, I don't know if there's really a point that says, hey, this is enough's enough, but I think we're getting very close to it. And, you know, I think one thing that's changed in the collection systems as well is that a lot of communities understand the efficiencies of automated trucks. And so historically in the past, trucks would come down the street, there might be two drivers, and the person on the back of the truck was always kind of that first line of defense. They opened up the lid, they could see in it and go, wait a second here, this cart is contaminated, I'm not taking it. So that was always the first line of defense. Well, in the automated carts, you know, trend that's happening across the country, there's less of that inspection that's happening. They still have the ability to, but there's less of it. So, you know, those are some of the things that I think can start to change contamination rates as well that we don't think about, and then we see the result of it downstream.
Okay, Todd Shoemaker, Michael Brown, thanks for your time on Sound Ideas.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks.